Hello, my name is Marlene, and I'd like to welcome you to Vegan Nation. Vegan Nation is an informational program that airs every week on WCUW 91.3 FM, Worcester, Massachusetts, and online at WCUW.org. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor its management. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. We're joined for an interview with Dr. Will Tuttle, the author of The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony. This is part one of a two-part interview. Please join us again next week for part two. We are discussing the current global crisis and the beauty of veganism to restore health and justice and freedom for all. Thank you for joining us on Vegan Nation. We are very fortunate to be joined by Dr. Will Tuttle via Skype in Northern California. And so thank you very much, Dr. Tuttle, for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Thank you, Marlene. I really appreciate the efforts you're making, and thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thank you. And can you please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. You know, as you say, I'm in Northern California, and basically, even though we're living here now, I'm from Massachusetts originally. I was born and raised in Concord, Massachusetts, and my background, briefly, I think one of the reasons that I'm so interested in freedom is that I was, being born and raised in Concord, Massachusetts, it was very vivid to me how important it is to take responsibility for our political and human rights. And my father, he was the editor and publisher, actually, of the local newspaper. And we have a special holiday every year, April 19th, which is Patriots Day, where we celebrate, and there would be thousands and thousands of people would go to the Old North Bridge and celebrate the first battle of the Revolutionary War against the British. And the idea was, if you have tyranny and a system that is unfair and unjust, then we have an obligation to make it better for ourselves and especially for our children. And so I was born and raised there, eating the usual meals, lots of meat, dairy products, and eggs. But I went away to Colby College in Maine back in the early 1970s, and I learned a lot about the United States as a military empire and so forth, as the Vietnam War was going on. And I got quite disillusioned with the violence in our world and the senseless taking of life and the environmental devastation. So I decided to embark on a spiritual journey. I started reading not only books about Christianity and the Bible and so forth, but also books on Zen Buddhism and Hinduism and world religions, Taoism and so forth, and decided it would be great to go to California. So my brother and I, back in 1975, started walking to California on a spiritual pilgrimage, and I did eventually get to California. On the way, I stopped for a while at the largest hippie commune in the world back in 1975 was called The Farm in Tennessee, and lived there for a while. And that's when I really got a wonderful education by the people there about the devastating impact of eating animal foods on people and on hungry people, because most of the food we're eating is meat in our society, and it's very wasteful. So the grain that we grow, instead of feeding it to people who are going hungry, we're feeding it to animals, killing the animals, and that's very wasteful and causing a lot of hunger and poverty and war. So I became a vegetarian after learning from them about the cruelty to animals that's involved with that back in 1975. And a few years later, when I got to California, I was living in meditation centers in the Buddhist tradition and doing a lot of meditating. And I made the connections with dairy products and eggs and how the violence, both the physical violence and the sexual violence toward cows and hens, is not necessary. And so I became a vegan back in 1980. So it's been now 41 years. I would say it was the smartest thing I ever did, besides marrying my wonderful spouse, Madeline, was going vegan. And it's only gotten better. I was able, after that, to shave my head and become a Zen Buddhist monk in Korea, did a lot of meditation and time just focusing on understanding the programming and the conditioning that I had gone through as a human being raised in the society, and realizing in many ways that my mind had been colonized by the society that I was raised in, and to do the best I could to liberate myself from all of the programming, because I realized that in order to be free and to have wisdom, we're not really going to be successful in that if we're just robotically repeating and living and doing according to the cultural narratives of our society, many of which are really not in our best interest and are pretty toxic. So I went through many years of meditation practice and studying the world's religions and contemplation and self-inquiry, ended up getting my master's degree in Zen arts, and then a PhD degree at University of California at Berkeley in education, and taught college courses for quite a few years in sociology, anthropology, world religions, philosophy, and comparative religion, creativity and writing, and quite a few different courses, and music also. And I'm also a professional musician, play the piano, and I'm a composer. So I've been doing a lot of work really over the years with trying to bring more awareness into our world about the consequences of our actions, of our food choices, of our violence towards animals. And together with my wonderful spouse, Madeline from Switzerland, who's an artist, we do the best we can to bring more beauty into the world too, musical and artistic beauty, because I think when we connect with beauty and we connect with the just wonderful adventure that this human life actually is, we get more clarity also about the forces that seem to be bent on trying to take away the beauty and freedom in this world from human beings and from animals, and destroying ecosystems. So I feel a strong sense of gratitude to my roots in Massachusetts and to the traditions of freedom and the wonderful transcendentalist philosophers like Thoreau and Emerson. I learned to swim in Walden ponds. You know, I feel a real strong connection with Olcott, who started the very first vegan community in the United States way back in the 1800s, before the word vegan was even invented. And so there's a strong sense I have of the importance of social responsibility and social activism combined with spiritual efforts, and to try to cultivate our own inner clarity and inner peace so that we can understand more clearly what we should be doing to help make a better world for ourselves and for our children. So that's it.
Thank you, Dr. Tuttle. And can you talk a bit about the advent of how the natural, holistic healthcare has been oppressed, and what's happened with that, and how many years has that been?
Well, yeah, just briefly, you know, about 10,000 years ago, we started herding wild sheep and wild goats in what is today Iraq, and then cows, and then other animals. And that put in place, way back then, a wealthy elite class for the first time that was powerful, the kings. And ever since then, for the last 10,000 years, this wealthy elite class has been in power, essentially. And so more recently, in the last couple hundred years, we were able to create somewhat of a situation here where we were governed by ourselves rather than just only being dominated by a wealthy elite class. But animal agriculture has led to this domination of the many by the few. But over the last 100 years, like with the Rockefeller gigantic monopoly that really occurred around the turn of the century into the 1900s, a tremendous power was concentrated in the hands of just a few, very few people, Rockefeller and Carnegie and so forth, and they were able to, through the Flexner Report, which came out about 1910, which was basically ranking all the different medical schools, because back then, 110 years ago, there was a lot of different medical fields that were being used by people. There was all kinds of homeopathic options, there were naturopathic options, and there was also what's called allopathic, and that was, and allopathic is what won. That's the medical format that we're using today. It's based on petrochemical drugs, which are of course directly out of Rockefeller's petroleum. And so we have a petroleum-based approach to health and to agriculture now. And over the years, they basically, through the Flexner Report and then additional, and the rise of the AMA, the American Medical Association, they got political control and got the upper hand over other healing modalities, that the only prestigious and valid way of doing medicine was through the AMA's approach. That's all that really matters. Everything else is considered quackery. And so this has consolidated power in the hands of fewer and fewer people, and all of the research funds and so forth are channeled through governmental agencies that are all under the same umbrella. So it's created a situation, and now where the medical schools, university research, governmental agencies, the mainstream media, it's all controlled by the same small number of people and corporations with massive amounts of money. So it's not just about making huge profits. I mean, there are huge profits to be made. And just in the last year, we've seen the wealth of the billionaires just doubling, basically, while the wealth of the middle classes and lower classes is just shrinking. So this is, but that money buys influence. It buys the narrative. That's the key to understand. It buys the way we see things. So we have to understand that we are millions and millions of people, and our interests are being harmed by just a tiny few people who have been able, through our negligence, really, and through our wounding at their hands, by being vaccinated and by going through an educational system that reduces our ability for critical thinking. So we have to regain these capacities. I think that's the key, to make an effort to regain our capacity for critical thinking and regain our health and connect with each other and help make a vegan world of kindness and love and respect for everyone a reality. Because I really do feel there is an awakening happening. It's like there's an energy of understanding and wisdom and compassion that's moving through humanity right now. And I think it's getting stronger and stronger. And ultimately, it is an unstoppable force, because our true nature, when we look deeply, is that what we are is an infinite and eternal consciousness. Each one of us is a manifestation of a brilliant, beautiful, eternal consciousness. In meditation, we can quiet our minds enough that we can glimpse the beauty and power and eternal quality of love and joy and freedom that is our true nature. And that is unstoppable and ultimately victorious. And so the whole key is to take time every day as individuals to feed our spiritual and intellectual awareness, and to connect with the emotional sense of peace and harmony that is our connection with the earth, and create meaningful relationships with other people. And through all of that, and health, through kindness for animals, and each one of us doing that and spreading this out in webs of relationships is the way we turn this whole thing around.
Thank you, Dr. Tuttle. You're tuned into Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene Narrow. We'll be taking a short break, and then we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Tuttle.
I bless the day I found you, Worcester Community Radio, WCUW. 91.3
The Hip Swayers, bringing some sway to your day on WCUW 91.3 FM.
Tune in every Saturday night, Sunday morning from 12 midnight until 3 a.m. It's the Love Session on 91.3 WCUW Worcester with DJ Chuck Chillin. Tell a phone, tell a friend, tell your fam. You might even want to tell your mama and them.
Welcome back from the break. This is Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene, in Massachusetts. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in.
We're continuing our conversation with Dr. Will Tuttle, who's joining us via Skype in Northern California. And I've been hearing from many people worldwide encouraging everyone to plant your own food. So can you tell us about your food forest with Madeline?
Right. No, you're right. You're so right, Marlene. That's one of the things, you know, in our society, we tend to think of people who are farmers. That's kind of like the low rung, one of the low rungs on the ladder. You know, we want to be as far away from that as possible. We want to be high up on the 38th floor of an office building, making lots of money, trading stock or doing some kind of thing. But really what I feel is the closer we get to the earth, and if we actually start caressing the earth herself, and planting seeds and growing trees that bear fruits and growing bushes that bear berries and growing herbs and vegetables, we begin to reconnect with the power and abundance of this earth and the beauty. There's really, in many ways, I think, no more noble and lofty calling than to be a farmer, to be a gardener, to be someone who's going outside into nature and working in harmony with nature and building up healthy soil and working with local animals like bees and other helpful insects and birds and so forth, and just creating a food like we have a food forest. We've been only been here in Northern California, where we are now, for about 8 years, but we immediately planted a bunch of fruit trees, and now they're getting older. We've got about 65 fruit and nut trees here, apples and pears and peaches and persimmons and just all kinds of citrus and so forth. And lots of berries. We've got hundreds, actually, of blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, vegetables, of course, and herbs and nuts, walnuts, and almonds. And so every year we get more and more food from our food forest, and it's like walking into a little paradise, you know, in the backyard we have, where all these, there's much, we have a lot more, just a lot more beneficial animals here, and it's like a whole little ecosystem that we've been able to create. Just, it's no big deal, but it's just, you know, a project that we've been doing. And I think being more self-sufficient for food is a wonderful thing. We can even, sometimes we can sell some to the local store, you know, the local community market, or to the, it's an organic cooperative here in the county we live in. So, and so we can provide it for other people. But the whole idea is to realize that we have the possibility to be in harmony with nature. And food is our most intimate connection with nature. So if we're not in harmony with our food, if we're confining animals and causing them terror and pain, we're eating terror and pain. I mean, how different that is than going out and getting to know and love our walnut tree, and then suddenly we have hundreds and hundreds of walnuts pouring forth, and we're eating them all year long. You know, that's the kind of love. We're eating love. We're giving love. We're eating love. We can do this, and this is something that I think we've lost sight of in our society, and it's time for us to remember that again.
Yes, as you're describing that, I see the beauty, and when I really come down to making things simple, it really is about embracing and perpetuating beauty, as you're describing with the vegan food. And I would like to ask you a question about the opposite of beauty, the suffering that animals are experiencing in the labs, in the lab animal breeding facilities, that is hidden from the public. How can we ever, as a humanity, co-create a world of beauty that's not an illusion, you know, that's truly beauty for everyone, when we have all this horror going on?
Yeah, that's a really important point, Marlene. Thank you for mentioning that, because that's one of the things. Before we lived here, we lived for 18 years in an RV. We traveled around North America giving concerts and workshops, lectures and things, and that's one thing I saw firsthand is the ugliness of animal agriculture. It's just smells ugly. It looks ugly. It's everything about it is horribly ugly. It's just death and machines and terrified animals confined in cages and people that are doing horrible things to them, beating them, stabbing them, impregnating them on rape racks. I mean, it's so ugly. They're growing all these GMO grains and storing them in these metal warehouses and cutting things down and cutting down forests and destroying nature. And there's nothing uglier than animal agriculture. And then when you bring it to the even deeper level, to the laboratories, because laboratories where you have these so-called scientists who are horribly torturing animals, they're unspeakable violence they're inflicting on these poor animals. I won't go into it, but just cutting them, they're killing them in various ways. They stress them out. These scientists are forced to cultivate a detached eye, it's called, you know, be detached, so they can just work on a cat or a dog or a mouse or a chimpanzee, another living being, with this cold, hard-hearted eye of I'm a scientist. I'm going to cut off your paw and see what happens, or I'm going to insert this electrode into your brain and just watch what happens, with no concern about the suffering of the being. And this is the lowest of the most demonic of all possible behaviors by human beings, to inflict this suffering. And we say it's for knowledge, right? I mean, knowledge is something beautiful. Knowledge, Sophia, wisdom. We get farther and farther away from wisdom. The irony is that the more we imprison these animals and do all these toxic experiments on them, we say we're doing it for health very often. We have more diseases and more sickness now than ever in the history of the world. We are more sick now than we've ever been. Animal agriculture and what goes with it, the vivisection industry, has done nothing but bring more disease and more misery. It's based on a complete delusion that we can inflict a disease on an animal that the animal would never have, and then study that in the animal and then get an answer that will somehow help us. And we have to remember that all of these medications that we take, that's one of the reasons I never go to a pharmacy. I've never bought a pharmaceutical medication in 50 years, because they're tested on animals. They have animal ingredients in them very often. I mean, all of the injections that people get, they are all tested on animals. And all of the injections, they all have animal ingredients in them, either animal or human fetal ingredients of some kind. That's where the foundation of the whole thing. So we're actually bringing into our body these ingredients from animals. It would never be there, right into our bloodstream, of the most perverse, I would say satanic kind of behavior, to imprison and abuse animals and try to take out of these animals tissues and cell lines and genetic material and so forth and disease, and then attenuate that somehow and then put it into the bloodstream of unsuspecting people, very often children. It's a terrible wound, I think, on a deep level, spiritually, culturally, emotionally, on every level, to put this kind of terror and fear and pain and suffering into human beings, to cause it in these animals and to put it into people, and then testing it on animals again and then killing the animals. All of this, we say we're doing this for health, and it's it's such a psychotic sickness, and it's so vast that we somehow don't see it. It's like the all tyrants know the same thing. If you tell a lie that's really big, it's so big people will never see it. They'll think it's true. So the obvious thing we all know in our bones is that if we want to be healthy, the key to being healthy is to be kind and loving, and free other living beings. Be sensitive and be tender and and build beauty and harmony and grace into our lives, into our architecture, into our cultural institutions, into our education, into our relationships and our families and in society. This is how we create beauty. It's not through torturing and harming and abusing innocent living beings and compelling people to inject these things and so forth. This is as far away as we can possibly get from real wisdom. So I think we are awakening out of this, and that's the big, I think, effort we see happening in our society today. So thanks so much, Marlene, for making that important connection, that question.
Thank you, Dr. Tuttle. And I have seen recently where some people have said that certain brands of the current jab that's being rolled out globally, they'll say, oh, it doesn't contain animal ingredients in that specific vial. Yet, we really need to look at the big picture, like what you just described. When we look at research, development, and production, it is all derived via exploitation, violence, and abuse.
Yeah, it's kind of sad to see that, but you're right. It's a form, unfortunately, of hypocrisy where we just don't want to look at something that's right staring us in the face and try to rationalize it away. you really can't. I mean, basically, as you say, injections traditionally have been what they call vaccinations. By definition, they have to have something from an animal in there. They always do, either an animal or a human. That's where they get how they cultivate the actual substance that's attenuated the disease, the viral or bacterial material that's supposed to teach your immune system how to respond in case you get infected. Right, that's the whole idea. These ones that are being rolled out now, they're different. They're actually a genetic modification kind of a system. It's never been tried before. It's only been tried on animals. It's never been tried on humans. When they tried it on animals, the animals always died. So they never could go forward. They've been doing this for 20 years trying to make it work with animals, this genetic modification technology that creates a spike protein to defend against a virus. So it's never worked with animals. The animals always died horrible deaths when they tried it on them over the last 20 years. So now they're just trying it on humans directly. And the thing is, there are, at some level, there is genetic material that came originally from fetal tissue, human fetal tissue, that they've just they've been able to synthesize that, and they're putting that into these injections that everybody's getting now. But the thing is, they test them on animals, and that's being done right now. They're being tested on animals. They're being tested on monkeys and so forth. And these animals are being, they call it sacrifice. They make it sound like it's some kind of religious great sacrifice, but they're killing these animals and then seeing, you know, what it did to their bodies. So animals are always abused, unfortunately, for these medications. And I think that's why personally, you know, I would never do it, because I don't want an animal, another living being, to be abused unnecessarily for my welfare. And I think that is one of the underlying ethical principles of all the world religions, is not to harm others for one's own benefit. I mean, that's basically it. And I think when we abandon that, we certainly can't call ourselves vegans, but I don't think we can call ourselves even I don't know. I mean, it's even abandoning on a certain level our basic humanity to do that. That's really going contrary to everything that we hold as important. When we create laws and so forth, we write, that's what the laws are all about. You can't kill or steal or abuse others for your own benefit. And animals suffer just like we do. And so why do we say it's no big deal when we do it to them?
We're listening to Dr. Will Tuttle. Please join us again next week at the same time, where we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Tuttle. This is Marlene wishing you a good day. You can hear this program again at vegansradio.com.
Amen.
What Are They Hiding?
What Are They Hiding?
By Jason Oliver and Eva Ham.
Behind Slaughterhouse Door.
Behind Slaughterhouse Door.
Let's bring the light on.
Let's bring the light on.
Life the city ignores.
I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to Vegan Nation.
What Are They Hiding?
Behind City Hall Door.
Behind City Hall.